This episode is brought to you by GoDaddy.com and all of the discount codes available at ScottSigler.com/GoDaddy. GoDaddy.com covers you for all of your website needs, from new domain registration, transferring your URLs, web hosting, email hosting, e-commerce, and more. Get a brand new domain registration for just $7.49 with the code SCOTT749. Check out all the different discount codes we have available over at ScottSigler.com/GoDaddy. You will save money if you do. And now, on with our story. Welcome to The Starter, book two in the Galactic Football League series, written and performed by New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler. This novel is suitable for ages 12 and up and contains graphic on-field violence. This novel, along with book one, The Rookie, and book three, The All-Pro, are available as full-length, unabridged digital audiobooks, as ebooks for Kindle, Nook, iPad, iPhone, or any pub-compatible device, and as a signed, numbered, limited-run collector's edition hardcover. To order any version, go to scottsigler.com/GFL. Hello, junkies, and welcome to the final episode of The Starter, which is going to be the starter question and answer episode. All of you with your good little heartfelt questions that you sent in, and now there you are waiting like a kid in front of the Christmas tree, waiting for that moment to open up the package, and I'm inside, ready to give you all kinds of wisdom and general goodness. With me today is none other than the director of Doom herself, A. Kovacs.
Hi there.
How you doing?
Doing pretty good.
Doing pretty good. So we are going to go through the questions. We have some questions that you guys called in on the Gore line. We have some questions that people sent in via MP3. And we have some questions that people just emailed in to scottsigler@media.com. So A is going to read off those questions. She will be our hostess, if you will, today. Are you in a hostessy mood?
I am. That was me making a lot of noise, though, getting ready to hostess. I don't know.
If you were a hostess product, would you be a Twinkie?
Probably a snowball.
Okay. All right. So here I am with my snowbally host, A. Kovacs, and now A.
Or Suzy Q.
Suzy Q's. Those are good. They're not Chocodiles, but they're good.
Definitely not a Devil Dog.
No, the Devil Dog. It's a horribly named product.
Or Ho Ho.
I'm not even going to touch the Ho Ho. I'm not even going to touch that one.
Let's go with Suzy Q.
All right. So we have questions. Let's get into it.
All right. We're going to start with questions that came in on the Gore line, but are specific to the start of Q&A.
Okay. Let's do it.
Hey, Scott and the A-Team. This is Kelly Holdridge from here in Colorado. I was giving you a call to basically ask what the role of cloning was in the future. You've got John Tweedy and Drew Tweedy, and everybody wants them. Is there going to be an arc in which somebody clones them and starts using them in different areas? Sure, curious. Let us know. Thanks.
So, cloning. What is the cloning going to be in the future? And largely in cloning is kind of a catch-all thing in science fiction. Everybody acts like cloning is very easy to do. And in the future, cloning may very well be easy to do, but as far as cloning an individual's personality, that's, in my opinion, that's never, ever, ever going to happen unless we get to the point where we're able to upload consciousness and store the electrochemical processes that identify someone, who someone is, and then are able to download that again into a clone body, which would be a form of, somewhat immortality. We'd be able to keep it going.
But that's actually not what... That doesn't accomplish what he's asking, because you would need their physical prowess as well.
Right. And my impression of the question is he's asking, well, if you've got an awesome all-star linebacker, why wouldn't you clone him and bring him up so there's, you know, four or five of him in the league and fill up the team with one set of physiology? But the thing that leaves out is, first of all, I'll address it from two ways. The thing that leaves out is how much the work ethic factors into becoming a professional athlete. There are, granted, all professional athletes are real physical specimens. They're unique, special individuals, and they're in the upper one percentile of physical capabilities of what human beings can do. But there's a lot of those people, mm-hmm. and only the people who maximize their potential with endless hard work and are able to overcome numerous obstacles, overcome injuries, overcome setbacks, and continue to work and hone their craft and really have a single-minded determination to become the best of the best are able to become a professional. So just pure physical attributes does not make you capable of being a professional athlete. So it's also the personality, it's who you are, it's what you, your drive and what you believe in. And those things are formed by nurture, by your environment, you know, the how you are brought up, the experiences you have as a child, as a young athlete, all of those things factor into you becoming good enough to become a professional athlete. So cloning wise, it's really not something that I guess I've never really addressed it in the universe at all, in the Siglerverse. It will be there to some extent, but I still think you're limited by basic physiology. Sure. Being able to rapidly grow someone is not a technology that I think we will ever, I don't think that's ever going to be done with human beings. We're going to take 20 years of life and compress it down to 2 years of life.
It didn't work out for Michael Keaton in Multiplicity.
It did not.
It went bad.
However, I did like, you know how you make a copy of a copy and it doesn't turn out quite right? it was one of the best lines ever. Except for I'm the ghost of the most babe. That's his best line of all time.
So what you're saying to answer the starter question is, as far as you know, in the GFL, that is not going to happen.
Right. In the GFL, and I don't have the spreadsheet in front of me, John Viscara can email us and correct us anytime. I think it's about, you know, 30 to 40 years old. So even if you're cloning guys, you know, that whatever that process is, you could have pro athletes cloned. And maybe that's something I'll address in the future books. But as whimsical and fantastical as the GFL is, i.e., you know, five races all basically breathing the same and same air and being able to live in the same planets, which is probably not going to happen. We have that. But other than that, we try and ascribe to real science as much as possible. And we don't do, like, you know, God, the awful Aliens 4, which
we will never speak of that again.
A single drop of Sigourney Weaver's blood means she has all the same memories and personality.
Oh, and scars.
And scars. It's just, you know, if you know anything about science, that's not going to happen. So we haven't really addressed cloning that much. If we do, it would probably be very interesting just from the family perspective. What would John Tweedy and Jude Tweedy think if there was a clone of John and it becomes a rookie as John is finishing up his career? Could be fun stuff like that. But it will be a completely different person, and how they are, if they're able to become a professional athlete, is still largely determined on their personality and their work ethic.
Plus, I wonder if that counts as a mod to the Kretorakians.
Ooh, that's a good point. That might be my out.
Yeah. We have talked about this for far longer than anybody cares about. Would you like to hear a new question?
I would. I will say that there is, I do have one story I've been keeping in the wings for quite some time that deals with cloning from a military perspective, and that could be really fun. Mm-hmm. So I'll get to it someday.
All right. Question two.
Yep.
Greetings, my glorious future Dark Overlord. This is Mike from Madison, and I've got a question about how the GFL works. Now, I know that the results of games for our heroes, the Krakens, are scripted. Mm-hmm. You know who's going to win and who's going to lose.
Lies.
But what about the other teams in the league? You know, the ones we hear about in all the sports reports. Do you just make it up? Do you have some sort of system that runs games for you? Just wondering. Keep up the good work.
How do we determine who is actually the winner of the games? Well, there is a secret system. I have as many as 1,214 hamsters that I create little uniforms and little helmets for.
Do you paint them yourself?
I do. I paint the helmets.
You miss the days of miniatures in D&D.
I was a giant D&D nerd. Yeah. I was the one who painted up all our miniatures. And we also had, of course, the Champions game that ran for something like 7 years.
I have a really important question that's unrelated. For your character, your primary character, your Dungeon Master character, did you paint him to look like you? Oh, the hell you did. You absolutely did. Don't lie to me, Sigma.
I don't think I did.
I'm pretty sure you did.
I don't think I did.
I would imagine you did.
I had a... Oh, my God. I can't remember. I think I had a dwarven thief or some bizarro thing that.
You didn't have to do much painting.
No, I didn't have to do much. Now that I can grow out a full-on dwarven beard, I'm pretty much home free. But I will have to eat a lot of Hostess products in order to pack on that dwarven weight.
As long as it's not Susie Q's.
As long as it's not Susie Q's. So we really just... a lot of it is scripted, and we're trying to give you multiple layers of drama, multiple layers of plot progression. So, you know, it's a team that starts out at 2 and 11, then 2 and 10, then gradually comes up to be, you know, 4 and 8 and starts to make their march toward the title. And all of it is I'm trying to construct everything. So literally every game has some layer of sports drama. Like if they're playing the Corona Delana Cloud Killers, and that is the team that Quentin just can't seem to beat, that's an ongoing drama. So even though they're not necessarily going for the title, when you get to that game, there's still, you feel that tension because you guys have all been converted pretty much to fans of the Krakens now. Mm-hmm. And if you're new to the world of football, new to the world of sports, you now get that unique emotion of waiting to see how your team does and being very nervous and anxious that your team's not going to perform well and they're going to lose to Team X. So there's rivalries. There's the Orbiting Death rivalry. There's the Cloud Killer rivalry. There's obviously the Wolfpack rivalry. Then there's games where they play the Jupiter Jacks or the Toe Pirates, who are dominant franchises in the league, and there's drama. And can they be the Giant Killers? So in order to set that up, I look at what the path of the Kraken season is going to be and then largely adjust the wins and the losses from there. But it has gotten too complicated for that now, because there are teams that I like and I root for, and now I like all of the teams, but two of the teams have got to go. That's the way the system works. So it's kind of fun that way. And for the MVP, which will be the next one coming out, we worked heavily with Commissioner Rob Frost, who is a fictional character, but also is now an important part of determining who wins, who loses, who gets relegated, etc. So it's largely done for the plot.
Because that's a little confusing the way you said it. I think probably people will understand this, but Commissioner Rob Froese in the GFL books are named after Rob Froese in the real world, who helps you do your and each season schedule and
correct
scores. And
correct. Stuff. Yeah, creating a schedule for that many teams is not. You may think it's easy. It's really not easy to create that kind of schedule. And then, 2684, we play home. Then 2685, we play away. And then you have to work in the teams who are relegated and promoted. It's a pretty complicated process. So he gets to help determine how that winds up. But largely, it's plot and story driven.
Absolutely. And I know from some sort of just managing the writing process and your schedule that it starts with the actual season, which you work on with Rob, and then I know you know the scores for all those players too, or all those teams too. Mm-hmm. Whether or not that ends up in the book, and most of the time it does, you know the scores for those players, and in fact, players and teams that are not actually part of the story, the ongoing story, but will matter sometime at some point.
And the scores are one of the, I try and do a lot of invisible plotting and invisible tension building. And one of those things are, if the Isis Ice Storm is beating people 50-6 every game, by the time the Krakens get to play them, it's, you kind of know what you're looking for. I'm going up against a high scoring team. Is the defense going to step up? So there's multiple layers of invisible stuff to try and create that sports tension. So that factors in too.
Okay. New question.
Mm-hmm.
Hey there, FDL. Couple of questions. And by the way, loving the cast. You're in Israel. It's coming across nicely. Times are strange. Anyway, who the Chuck are the heavy G? Are they the Pravat that's driving me up the wall? And who are the Pravat? And who are some of these people and the people creatures in the back of the, rookie book? Going to hear something soon. Talk to you soon.
Okay, so who are the heavy G, which is covered extensively, and I'll get to that in a second. Then also, who are the Prowat, and probably who are the Portath Cloud?
And if they're related, are the heavy G, Prowat, or whatever? I think that was the question.
Right, and
a little hard to hear.
It was a little hard to hear, but it sounds like you have not yet read the starter, sir. In the starter and the All-Pro, the heavy G are covered pretty extensively. They were the League of Planets genetically engineered a race of people to be able to work natively on heavy G planets and high G planets, and the heavy G were the result of that. So they're very much a minority in the League of Planets, but they have emigrated elsewhere in the galaxy. So they're, there are pictures of them in the rookie hardcover. Mm-hmm. And they are, they're kind of across. Physically, they have the face and skin and hair of a regular human, but build-wise, they're kind of gorilla-esque. They've got much longer arms, arms that, if they extend their hands down, will actually touch the ground if they're standing up, shorter legs, lower center of gravity. So they're perfectly suited for defensive end and some offensive line work. So that's the heavy G. They've been covered extensively. The Prowat have not been covered extensively, And
you do hear a little about them in the All Pro, but since this is a, there are people who will not have heard the All Pro yet.
Right. This is for the starter. Right. Yeah. So they will be covered a little bit in the All Pro, and maybe we'll see more of them in the future books. The Portath Cloud is another one that we haven't seen. No one, even in the story, no one knows what those things look like or what they are.
But you do, right?
I do. Yeah. It's all figured out. It's all
That's
figured
good
out.
To know.
There's a couple of other races that are just kind of they're window dressing right now, but eventually we will get into them and cover them later.
But you are happy to say that the Prowet are not, the Heavy G are not Prowet. They're different things.
The Heavy G are not Prowet. At this point, as the starter, no one has seen a Prowet. You have not seen it yet.
Right.
So you get to see some of it in the All Pro. Mm-hmm. And then it goes on from there. I think that answers his question. If not, how dare you, sir?
Fill the hole.
Hey, Scott, this is Big John calling. I'm just wondering when we will be hearing the stories that are being written by Mer Lafferty and... just wondering when those stories that were going to be written by... but the interstitials were going to be read by the... Yeah, I probably should call back if I thought it's harder.
So I'm not sure if John was getting cut off or if he was coming in and out, or he just didn't have his thoughts together. But what he's asking about are there are ancillary stories to the GFL universe. We know mm-hmm. The public knows there's Mer Lafferty. The public also knows, I think.
I'm pretty sure we've announced
that,
it, yeah.
That Matt Wallace is in the midst of writing one, and there's a third one, and I'll leave that up to you if you want to talk about
it. Can we announce that?
I think you can.
This would be a great place to announce that. The third ancillary story is going to be by none other than Nathan Lowell.
Yay!
Yay!
Super exciting.
We're ridiculously excited about this. Congratulations, listener. You have now been the first to be informed that Nathan Lowell will be writing a GFL story, and the story he is going to be writing is I kind of saved a special one for Nathan, one that's near and dear to me, and that is how Greedock the Splithead got his name and came to run his mafia organization and came to own the Krakens.
Yeah, and I know that I think we've talked about it all already, so that means that we both have read, and Mer Lafferty's story is complete and ready to go, and that is a story about Yolanda Davenport.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Wallace's is a story about Frederico Esteban Gazipe Gonzalez.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nathan Lowell will write about Greedock.
Right, right. So, and Mer, of course, mentioning times, we don't know when you're listening to this, but Mer's, as we record this, Mer's story is going to be available in the Kindle store in the near future. Matt's is still in process, and mm-hmm. Nathan hasn't even got his story Bible information yet. So,
yeah,
but it'll
you
be coming.
Just had the back and forth where,
yep.
where you asked him, and he said he'd like to do that. And
yep.
he said we'd love that. Okay. So, Big John, the answer is not, I don't think, exactly what you wanted, because you want to know when you can see them, and we don't exactly know that yet. But you got the good news about Nathan.
Hey, Scott. Jeff Cope here. I have a question on the starter. At the end of the game, the final game, they actually won. Quentin and Huzad was celebrating on the sidelines, and then Hokor appeared in his heads up and said, get out there on the field and finish this. And then Quentin's running on the field, pulling his helmet on. So I was kind of confused there because I wasn't sure actually how the heads-up display works, because if he didn't have his helmet on the sideline, how did he see the heads-up with Hokor? So could you please explain how the heads-up display works? Thanks, and I look forward to the next one, too. Bye.
Did he take off his helmet to fix his hair before he went?
That's what we're going to go with. It's probably, that sounds like a little continuity error. For sake of explaining, we'll say that he, you know, had the helmet on loosely and could see Hokor, and then had to fasten it all up as he went out onto the field. But the heads-up display is actually built into the helmet, and it projects within your field of vision. It adds a layer of holographic visual information that you can see. So there's all kinds of stuff you could see, but the rules of the GFL are very strict in what you can see. But it is built into the helmet and projects right in front of your eyes. So even if you've seen football players on the sideline with the helmet resting kind of high in their head, kind of tilted up, so the face mask is right above where their forehead is, the helmet would be smart enough to project the image down in front of his eyes.
Nice.
Yeah.
Are they allowed to watch YouTube videos?
No.
While they're on the sideline?
No.
They have to be paying attention to the game?
They have to be paying attention to the
game.
Can't
eat hot dogs? Nothing like that?
They could be like some insolent quarterbacks out there who choose to eat hot dogs on the sideline as their team is playing.
I think Sanchez had been sick the day before. I understand nobody felt he was being insolent, but maybe you.
Well, I guess.
All right, next question.
Okay.
Hey, Sigler. Name is John Cannon. Love it. Just finished listening to the third last episode of the starter. Can't wait to hear the rest of it. All jazzed up for the All-Pro. I know I got my copy. Can't wait for MVP and can't wait for whatever the fifth book's going to be. I don't know. I don't know where the rest of it's going to go. You know, Quentin going to meet his parents one day and all that stuff, to be fair. After the hints in your first book, I'm guessing it'll end with Quentin Barnes trying to inspire a rebellion against the good old Cretaracians, and I think the last page would be him getting nailed by an entropic rifle, and the next galactic war begins with the rebellions. But that's just my humble opinion. Love it. Can't wait for the next. And special thanks to A. Kovacs. She does good work.
Nice.
We love you. Take care. Bye.
So that was more of a statement than a question, sir. Well,
and also, you know, my favorite call ever.
Yeah, your favorite call ever. while I think about your question, I'm gonna have to take a sip of coffee.
Yeah, there wasn't exact. Dude, really? Really? I'm editing that out.
I'm not going to tell you jack shit about what's coming down for a couple reasons. Number one is I hold the story as sacred, and being able to experience the story as it goes, and I do everything I can to remove spoilers, and it's very difficult for A&I, especially in this podcasting world, where, you know, the All-Pro is already out, and if you just finish listening to the starter and you're on the message boards, you're at scottsigler.com, you can see stuff you don't want to see. So we do everything we can to eliminate spoilers and allow you to, when you turn that page or when you listen to that podcast, you are experiencing it new for the first time and you don't know what's coming. If you guess, no problem. If you were able to figure out what's going to happen, that's part of the game of the style that I write. But we want to avoid spoilers. So no spoilers for you. I don't even really know how to respond to that. Your theories are noted. And we'll see if you turn out to be right in the future.
Well, and I'll tell you something from a perspective of, you know, we didn't know each other when I first read The Rookie, and then of course I've had more insight into the process for the starter and the All Pro. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I find interesting is how sometimes surprising the turn of events are for you as you write. Like, you know the story arc and you know where each individual story starts and finishes and what has to happen in between and how that fits in the overall seven story arc. But there are a handful of things that surprised you when they happened in the starter. And that really surprises me. I mean, it makes perfect sense that you have to see what actually happens before you know where it's headed. Mm-hmm. But as a non-content creator, it's super shocking to think that you don't know what you're writing. I sort of don't know where it's finishing until you start it.
A lot of that is you always have in your head, you always have an idea. You think you know where it's going. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you get to hear this all the time. At my first, second, third, fourth draft, I'm like, oh, yeah, I got this. I know exactly where everything's going. And then as you write it, you're like, well, it wouldn't make any sense if character A acts like that. And if character A doesn't do this, then character B is not going to do this. And then character C doesn't get offended or whatever. And everything kind of falls apart and has to be constantly reconstructed. So it's the reconstruction process that's always surprising to me to find out, okay, none of that actually works. Which, on another note, we just went through with Nocturnal, like over and over again, watching my carefully constructed House of Cards collapse and have to rebuild the whole thing so that it makes some form of sense and you keep continuity and people behave in as normal a way you can make them behave. So yeah, there's a lot of surprises. I'm already being surprised by stuff in the MVP. So see how it goes.
Okay, next question.
Irishman from Ohio again. I'm an example of why you shouldn't try to talk on a phone and drive or text and talk. Anywho, the thing about the followers of Barnes, the Church of Barnes, and the Church of Donald Pine. If, again, all the followers donated one credit a year after the first year, they could even use that to explain away where the money came from that the Krakens used to pay off Donald Pine's debts to that one criminal quiff who's no longer around. Because it was a donation, a gift. Theoretically, it could be tax referable too. So that would explain, paying off the debt without necessarily coming from the drug money. Also, the book's already written, so nothing can be changed. Have a good week. Go Buckeyes. Yay.
Well, obviously, Irishman from Ohio, you are on the crack. You're one of the kids who are on the crack. First of all, you're from Ohio. No offense to anybody from Ohio, but if you're from Ohio and you're a Buckeyes fan, you're probably on the crack. Crack-a-lackin'.
You're from Michigan and you're a Lions fan.
That's normal.
No.
That's normal and healthy.
It is not normal for anybody to be a Lions fan.
That is sane, normal, and that is a sane procedure. Many people from Michigan are Lions fans.
It's not normal for anybody to be a Lions fan. Let's be honest.
Listen, I don't want any comments from the peanut gallery, Susie Q. We're going to go ahead and skip past this question because, as you've noted, the book's already written. We explain where that money comes from. Mm-hmm. So, hey, hit that pipe and try not to drive and crack at the same time.
Nice.
Hey, Scott. This is Pokey up in New Hampshire, a.k.a. Patrick Daly.
What's up, Pokey?
I just wanted to say thank you for doing The Rookie and The Starter and a bunch of other books, too. I've enjoyed greatly. I know at the end of a couple of them now, you've thanked your listeners for investing their time in your work and listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, I've listened to The Rookie 4, maybe 5 times.
Nice.
Listened to a lot of The Starter twice.
Yes.
Listened to Title Fight twice.
Yes.
Listened to The Crypt once or twice,
mm-hmm.
and it's been worth my time more than once.
Good.
So you're doing great work. I
mean, gracias.
Really fantastic.
Thank you, sir.
Excellent stuff. I want to thank you for putting some good merch out there, and I want to give props to whoever designed the Krakens logo because it looks awesome on my Krakens sweatshirt.
Nice.
I just bought The Rookie, and I'm glad I did. I can't wait to buy The Starter. But I have a couple questions for you, 2 questions. And since I made such a nice recording, I think I'm entitled to 2. So the first question is, if I got a couple extra bucks kicking around, how does more of them get to you? If I donate to you on audiobooks, or if I buy merch, or if I buy a book straight from you, which way does that give you the most money? Or do you get the biggest cut? How do you get the biggest cut of the money that comes out of my wallet in which of those cases? That's question number 1. And question number 2 has to do with the final chapter of The Starter. You made a joke making reference to the old prank phone calls at Red's Bar, and all kinds of like soda and food and stuff came flying out of my nose. And my question is, are you proud of yourself?
Yeah.
That you made that happen? I hope you're proud of yourself.
I'm extremely proud of myself. You're referring to some, in the days before the series of tubes known as the internet, there were things called the bootleg cassettes. And one of the things that went around was, and I'm sure you can get this stuff online now, but it was the Amazing Red. The Amazing Red. And it was this series of prank phone calls that were made to this bar. I think this bar was in New York. And they would call and just record the call. And the and the guy was great. It was always like, yeah, I wanna talk to, is Mr. Meowth in the bar? Eh? Mr. Meowth, I need to talk to Mr. Meowth.
Oh,
Mr. Jack, ask if Jack is there.
All right, hold on. Is Jack Meowth in the bar? Is anybody Jack Meowth?
And then you would hear the kid giggling in the background. The Simpsons ripped this off, hook, line, and sinker. So I'm not alone in that homage. And then Red would. realize what the question was.
You, sir, you cocksucker, I'll cut open your belly and show you the black stuff inside.
So I'm very glad that seriously inside humor made someone spit up food. Hopefully some food came out your nose. That's always pretty exciting. And then what was the other question? Oh, money. There's two things you can do is when you order GFL books, The Rookie, The Starter, The All-Pro, you order those in hardcover or you download the audiobook. And these things make great gifts, people. The hardcovers make fantastic presents. Give them to somebody, spread the word of Siglerism. Like 85%? 85% of that money comes to Dark Overlord Media. So that's a fantastic way. If you already have those things, the next best thing you can do is pre-order a copy of Nocturnal. Because Nocturnal is put out by Crown, which is a division of Random House. And while we make more money with the GFL books, there is a bigger multiplier effect with the books that are published by Crown, which are Infected, Contagious, Ancestor, and Nocturnal. Because if those things chart on the New York Times bestseller list, and then we get media coverage, that generates further bookstore placement. It generates additional media coverage where they're like, oh, look at this artist breaking out. And the booksellers start to know who you are and they start to stock your books. And that is the kind of thing that even with our diehard audience of Sigler fans and GFL fans, that we can't touch that multiplier effect. So buy GFL books, pre-order Nocturnal as a copy, a gift for somebody else. That's pretty much the best way to do it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hey, Scott. Enjoy the patio books. Enjoy the podcast. It's awesome. I had a quick question about the starter, rookie, all-pro. You said there was going to be 7 books in the series, and I was wondering if all of them are going to follow Quentin Barnes or if at some point you're planning on sort of diverting and going a different path with it. Either way works for me. I eagerly anticipate anything and everything you put out. One day I hope to maybe be a small drone or pawn in your evil empire. Have a great day. Bye.
Well, first of all, everyone is a drone or pawn in my evil empire. There's just a matter of what level of drone or pawn or sacrificial lamb or bullet absorber you are, really. Mm. But you're all drafted, so to speak. Some may be patriotic about it. Some might not be, but doesn't really matter. The 7-book series follows Quentin Barnes as long as he may live. And then we'll see what happens in the future books. But that is the reason we're doing the ancillary stories, which we talked about earlier, why we're bringing in Mer Lafferty and Matt Wallace and Nathan Lowell and other people, hopefully, is A and I are making a really concerted effort to make a very broad universe. The Siglerverse goes from the modern day books, Infected, Contagious, Ancestor, Nocturnal, Pandemic. Then it goes up 500 years into the Crypt. And then it goes up 700 years from now into the Rookie series. And we're doing a ton of work in establishing a lot of different settings, a lot of different characters, a lot of different plot lines that aren't necessarily open-ended, but there's tons of backstory and side story to be told. So we are going to follow those other characters. Now, when we come out with Mer Lafferty's The Reporter, if Yolanda Davenport suddenly blows up and everybody's like, I gotta know more about that chick, I gotta know more about, like, well, great, now we've got another franchise character in the series, and hopefully we would work more with Mer to write more of those stories. So yeah, the primary seven book series is mostly Quentin Barnes, again, as long as he lives, and we'll see what happens if it moves over to other characters in the Kraken's organization. And then the ancillary stories will explore other parts. And then eventually I'll do other stories in the GFL era. But what's that?
Do you want to tell us what book 5 is called?
No.
Just joking.
No, you guys don't get to know what book 5 is called. That's it.
Okay.
Hey, Scott. Alex Miller here, and I got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
How come the League Key aren't players in the GFL? It sounds like they could be a real threat if it came down to the running game. At least it did from your description of Kelpbringer's movements in the story.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, great story, love your books, and I can't wait for Nocturnal.
That's a pretty good question. This is one of the drawbacks we have in not having art of all the races presented at scottsigler.com/GFL, which has been a project in my back pocket for quite some time. They're just too little. They're way too little. They would not survive. And they are, you know, basically the shorthand term is a fish with legs. I mean, you got to think about it that way. They can't take They can't even take as much damage as a Sklorno can take, and the Sklorno are the most delicate, fragile creatures in the GFL. So the answer is they would die. They would die very quickly. And they wouldn't make it, and they're not fast enough as land creatures. If there was an aquatic game, that would be a different ball game. You would get the Watokans and the Dolphins and the Leaky all mixing it up, along with Homo Orcus would be in there, which would be a really good time. So there's five aquatic races right now, but the Leaky would have to perform in one of those areas. They could not survive in the GFL.
All right. So that's it for the pre-recorded questions. There's a handful that were emailed in that I will ask you. Amika Elaranta emailed in two questions. The first one is, or was the name of the character Somalia Midori inspired by real-life fetish model Midori?
No, it was not. But now I think I'm going to have to Google that for research purposes only, of course.
Right. I think everybody listening will probably have to Google that.
So the answer is no, that is not who inspired it.
And the next question is actually a series of questions that makes me giggle. What is the pronunciation of some of the GFL teams? The Almama Mumble Mumble Mumble. The Jang Adam Smushers? The Hitani Ho-Walkers? What the fuck? I should read the Dead Tree version, I guess. Another question about pronunciation. Why do you claim to write horror fiction? There are almost no prostitutes in your books, aside from the Ho-Walkers. It is worth noting that Micah is in Finland and is an original junkie.
Very insulting and very funny. Well, we'll go through the pronunciations to start with. That is the Alamum Armada. And I guess if you're going to call me a mumbler when it's got the mum in there, Alamum Armada, the Jang Atom Smashers, as in a machine that smashes atoms together, and the Hitoni Hullwalkers, as in the engineer and repair types that would walk on the outside of a spaceship hull to repair it and build it and fix it up, etc.
But who knows what they do in their off time? They might look good in a pair of high-heeled boots.
You really don't know. And when in Hitoni, you don't ask and you don't tell. That's just, you know, what happens in Hitoni stays in Hitoni. And yes, you should read the Dead Tree version. Just buy an effing copy. We'll ship it to you, for crying out loud. It's not a problem.
I think he actually has the, if I remember correctly, he already has them.
Yeah, very nice. And horror fiction is, I think that is something that involves my native Michigan accent.
I think so, too.
And it never seems to come out. And I can even hear myself doing it. I'm a horror writer. Yeah. I don't write about horrors. I write about horror. But unfortunately, I'm not able to pronounce horror. I'm a horror writer. It sounds very strange coming out.
Yeah.
It sounds like the way J.C. Hutchins insists I'm pronouncing T's in every word, which I can't think of an example now. So now it sounds stupid. But at least I got to make fun of J.C. Hutchins. So it's all good.
You know how I feel about that, don't
yes.
you?
Yes.
I don't
yes.
like when you make fun of JC.
I know that.
Okay, new question.
Yep.
Steve Wood, who actually normally sends in MP3s, decided that he would give us a break from his dulcet tones and just email this one in.
Okay.
Question is, Chick McGee and Massara, are they based on real people? If so, is Massara based on Howard Cosell? Chick McGee, I couldn't even guess who that's based on. But can we hear more from him in the future, as he is the true meaning of fucking funny? Also, what do you enjoy about writing this particular series of books, as you seem to rattle through quite a lot of them in quite a short amount of time? Really, Steve? Really? Really? Can't get enough of these books fast enough. Don't tell him he's rattling through a whole bunch of them in a short amount of time.
All right, Steve, here's the deal. Number one is, you were dead on. Massara the Observant is based on Howard Cosell. Loosely, but where Howard Cosell was the antagonist on Monday Night Football back in the day. And pretty much anybody listening to this who's under 40 probably doesn't remember Howard Cosell at all. Mm. But he was a very unique person in sports commentary. It was Howard Cosell and Danny Don Meredith, and I can't remember who the third guy was, but they had just Monday Night Football blew up under them, and they were great. So Massara the Observant, yes, very much modeled after Howard Cosell's particular cadence, and then we put the vocal filter for the species, for the Quiff leader on there. And Chick McGee, which is ironic, you ask, who inspires Chick McGee? Because a guy named Chick McGee inspires Chick McGee.
Indeed.
Chick McGee is part of the Bob and Tom syndicated morning show, and it's a bit of the typical morning zoo format, but God, those guys are so effing funny, and they have a lot of comedians on, and they've been doing the same thing for a long time. They're great. Chick McGee is their sportscaster, And he talks in kind of a normal voice until it comes time to talk about the sports. And then it's all about the sports voice. So it's totally modeled after Chick McGee. And that's how I get my commentary. It is a little harder to make the commentary as funny as it was in The Rookie, though, when we're making it for a YA setup. Yeah, because true. It's really Chick's overt sexual innuendo on everything that makes it so funny. So I'm a little sad I can't continue that, but maybe someday we'll have somebody write a Chick McGee ancillary story, and that'd be pretty funny.
Maybe. Okay, another question from this one from Estonia, from Tanel Lumist, I believe. Actually, a couple of questions. One is, when will there be a salary talk between Quentin and the team owner? Will Quentin also ask for higher pay for the Mad Jew?
You have to read the book The All-Pro for that. Book 3 is about the major plot point in that is the crappy contract that Quentin has and dealing with Greedock the Splithead, and it's super fun. So read The All-Pro and you'll enjoy it.
And what is the league maximum pay? How much did Jew Tweedy lose financially by not signing the contract that was offered to him by the, quote, other, unquote, team?
The other team. The league maximum is we start the All-Pro. This isn't really a spoiler, but when you start the All-Pro, you're informed there's going to be a salary cap instilled. There's never been a salary cap in the GFL before, but Commissioner Rob Frost, in trying to make sure things are equal, is instilling a salary cap in order to allow the teams who are promoted from Tier 2 to be more competitive. Because when you come up from Tier 2, you just don't have nearly as much money as the established Tier 1 teams. Okay. And that's why 80% of the Tier 2 teams promoted wind up getting relegated within 2 seasons. They just can't compete. So now there's a salary cap being put into place, and that will impact how much players get paid, just like the real NFL. You can pay a single player as much money as you want to, but when your salary cap is, I'm going to pull a figure out of the air, $124 million a year or something like that, which is way too high. But anyways, there's a fixed amount. If you're going to pay Tom Brady $40 million a year, then you only have a certain amount left to pay the other players. And you need those 5 or 6 marquee players to build up a dominant franchise. But you also have to fill it with, you know, 50-plus players, and they all got to get paid. So that's in future books. What will determine how much people get paid is the overall salary cap. And that will come into play in later books beyond the All-Pro.
All right. Ari B. asks, or writes in, "Hey, FDO, I just re-listened to Title Fight, and I noticed that you gave a different explanation of the Quith species biology there than you had in the starter. I was wondering if there was any specific reason you decided to make that change."
I'm not sure what the change in the biology would be. Quith warrior.
It's the process by which they become warriors and whatnot. It's just
that is sneaking around in there somewhere, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's the title fight.
Understood during the title fight days.
That is what our excuse will be, is that it wasn't very very well understood. Now keep in mind the Quith are very secretive about the reproductive process. We haven't seen a female yet, for example, and it is against their culture. They don't really have. They're not really a religious species, but all sentient species have their set of rules that they're sacred things that cannot be broken. And no one has seen a Quith female, as far as we know, outside of the Quith species. So there's a lot that's misunderstood about their reproductive process. But what we have in the starter, that's the brass tacks. That's the factual information on how it works.
Okay. And then I just have a couple of more questions. Interestingly, Ricky Craig wrote in, "I was just wondering something about the Quith in the GFL series. If we discount the females that are sacred and never ever seen, that leaves us with 3 types, warrior, worker, and leader. I couldn't help but think that that was somewhat similar to the Minbari from Babylon 5 with the warrior, the worker, and the religious castes. Just curious if there was any inspiration there for the Quith."
No, and I keep meaning to watch Babylon 5. I have yet to watch. I've watched a couple episodes here and there, but I have not watched it from beginning to end because, of course, anybody who follows me knows how much I have bitched about Lost and Battlestar Galactica and being told that they know where the story is going, when in truth they had no effing idea and they were lying. They were lying about knowing where the story was going in order to hold viewership. And then as I bitch about that, everybody's like, "Well, you got to watch Babylon 5. Michael J. Straczynski had it all figured out." So I plan on watching that, but no, it has nothing to do with that. That is largely, it's based on eusocial insects on Earth. So there's there's a couple of different, it's a combination of you social insects with the cast of, you know, you've got a queen, king, then you've got workers, and you've got soldiers, and in Leafcutter Ants, you also have minims, which are a smaller kind of worker. It's very, it's one of the coolest things ever. There's a cast of ant that rides on the head of the worker ant that's carrying the leaf so that the minim, the tiny ant, which isn't really a soldier ant, can fight off wasps that try to sting and parasitize that worker ant that's carrying the leaf. It's incredibly complicated. So that's part of it. It's also, wait, I can't. Oh, I can't tell you that.
That was my catch.
I almost let a major thing slip,
yeah.
So I will not talk about that.
So I'll just say, I wonder if both Babylon 5 and the Quith are... It seems to me that both of them are probably based on eusocial insect structure.
Yeah, probably. And it's also based on bees a little bit. In bees, which are fascinating, it's the kind of food they are fed in some species of bees that determines what comes out. So all workers in bees and hornets and wasps, they're all female. But in bee colonies, and I'm not sure about hornets and wasps, but in bee colonies, they are fed a different kind of food, which determines whether they come out being reproductively fertile and actually become a queen. So every worker bee you see could have been actual a queen bee if they're fed a different kind of food. So that's part of it too, as you go through the process of the cast, and that's the chemical castration and physical castration that goes on in the Quith species. There's a lot of chemical warfare, and that is meant to continue survival of the fittest, even amongst your own brothers in an egg sac, is the most aggressive and the quickest to move to strike the others, is the one who winds up becoming dominant and hopefully gets to reproduce somewhere down the line. So nothing to do with Babylon 5. It's all modeled after stuff we actually have here on Earth.
Okay, and the last question that came in... from Alan is it possible for a tier one team relegated down to tier two to be promoted right back up to tier one the following season? This would make for a brutal back-to-back-to-back three seasons. As always, loving all the books in the podcast. Can't wait for the All Pro.
Yeah, that's totally possible. That's totally possible. The Mars Planets are looking at that right now. They got demoted in the end of the starter, and the question is, do they get promoted when you go into the All Pro? Now, a lot of the focus on tier two has fallen away as the Krakens get to stay up in the big leagues, at least as they head into the All Pro. But yeah, that's totally possible, which is part of the reason that it's so difficult. Once you get dropped down to tier two, you've basically just played a grueling 13-week season against the best athletes in the universe, in the world's most violent and dangerous game, and then you immediately have to line up against other teams that are fighting to get to that level. And if you succeed in that, then you're right back in a tier one. And if you follow professional football, you can see how big of a factor injuries are. And that's one of the things that helps determine whether an NFL franchise remains competitive is the number of injuries they get in a year. Tom Brady gets hurt. The Patriots are not. It's who gets hurt too. But a key, you know, if you lose that left tackle, the guy who's responsible for protecting your quarterback's blind side, and the next guy who comes in can't possibly be as good because it's the second highest paid position in the NFL. More sacks to your quarterback, your offense falls apart. So yeah, the longer you play, the more people get hurt, the less efficient your team is, the more likely you are to stay in tier two. So almost everybody who gets relegated from tier one down to tier two are so beat up that they can't win their division and make it in the tier two tournament and win promotion again. So they're pretty much stuck there for a year. Then they get that tier two off season. Then they can reload and come back. But it does happen. Yeah, you can do tier one and tier two back to tier one.
Okay. So those were all the questions that we collated by the time we recorded.
Mm-hmm.
I think we covered quite a lot of the starter, and I think we kept out most of the All Pro.
Mostly.
All Pro spoilers. So why don't you just tell us, or tell the junkies, where you are right now. You are in the MVP already, right?
Yeah, we're in the MVP. We're writing away. I know a lot of you were upset by the cliffhanger in the starter.
There was a cliffhanger in All Pro?
There was a cliffhanger in the All Pro.
Yeah,
right.
You don't want to talk too much.
I don't want to talk too much about that. So where we are at in the MVP. Now, first I will state that it is very specific how these books are written. Each book is a single season in the career of Quentin Barnes and the Ionath Krakens. And when that season is over, the book is done. There can be some appendix type stuff to let you know what happened. But yeah, the season ends When the season ends, the book is over. So so we are now moving. We have moved into the MVP, which continues where we left off in the All Pro,
which will make a lot of people happy.
Which will make a lot of people happy.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think it will make people happy. I think it'll make me happy because I got cliffhanger too.
Yeah.
Just talking about the All Pro, which you need to listen to yourself. However, you never can tell with you.
Never can tell. I'm super excited about the MVP because it's got some super awesome cool stuff in it.
Right.
So I can't talk about the cool stuff that's in the All Pro because this is a starter. Yeah. But the MVP is rolling along. Mm-hmm. And if all goes well, we should have that out when?
It is currently slated to go on sale, pre-order. Instead of April 1st this year, it'll go on pre-order on Super Bowl Saturday, February 4th.
February 4th. Yeah.
Same process as normal, as ever.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to place that order, it's going to be 9 a.m. Pacific time that it goes on sale. You'll hear lots about it at scottsigler.com. Make sure you give us up-to-date information for your street address. Very, very important.
And do we have some secret stuff coming up around Christmas, perhaps?
We might maybe have some secret stuff coming up around Christmas.
Some kind of secret swag?
Maybe some swag.
Yeah? Okay.
Is it secret?
Well, we haven't announced it yet, so maybe we should tease it. Do you want to announce it? I think you can announce it. Yeah, let's do it. Well, now you guys have got the big Nathan Lowell reveal, which, in case I haven't mentioned, we're super fucking excited about. And then go ahead, let them know.
You know what? I'm not really sure what the secrets are. Are you talking about that we're going to put some swag in the store?
Yeah.
Yeah, we are just in time for Christmas. We're going to put a few team logo T-shirts in the Scott Sigler store. We'll have Kraken's T-shirts, which you can already buy, but we'll have Kraken's T-shirts. They'll be black.
Mm-hmm.
We will have Wabash Wolfpack T-shirts,
mm-hmm.
Red with the Wolfpack logo. We will have Orbiting Death T-shirts.
Yes, yeah, people don't like that.
I can't remember.
I think, yeah.
And then Jupiter Jacks.
Yeah, Jupiter Jacks.
Jupiter Jacks.
Jupiter Jacks.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to start with those, and they'll be available right around the 1st of December. So with maybe a couple extra fun things in the store at the same time. But that'll be right after we relaunch the website.
Mm-hmm.
So keep your eyes on the prize. Keep your eyes on scottsigler.com. And you have to get back to work on the MVP.
I do.
And all you people listening need to go get ready for the All Pro, which starts next Sunday.
Starts next Sunday, yeah. All right, so guys, enjoy the story. Thank you, Director Dume Kovacs, for being a Suzy Q hostess of all of this event.
Sure thing.
That's it. And we will talk to y'all real soon.
You have been listening to The Starter, Book 2 in the Galactic Football League series. Written and performed by Scott Sigler. Produced by the A-Team of Ariok, Morningstar, and A. Kovacs. For more information on the author and for more free stories, go to scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song Heaven's a Lie by the band Lacuna Coil.